look, but you can't touch. You keep dreaming on the stars above.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of All Elite Geekly, that's AEG for short, where we geek out and eventually we chat about some AEW Dynamite. We're your hosts, I'm Boris, and as always, I am joined by Xavier Josiah. Dax, how goes?
Man, I am so relaxed right now, it ain't funny. I just finished a really good workout, knees getting better, and I'm ready to go. This is a really exciting week for AEW fans.
I guess so. Should be. Sunday's going to be
good. I mean, you match car wash, you should be excited.
Oh, yeah. Like we said on Sunday, right? We did the full preview on Sunday. If you want to listen to it, go listen to the full main show. It's the last segment, and you'll get the preview for AEW Dynasty, which is this coming Sunday. Look, we said it back then, and it's true that, you know, AEW, their pay-per-views deliver. Every company's pay-per-views for the past little while have delivered, and I suspect that it'll be the same here. There's no match that looks bad. There's no match I'm not looking forward to. The only thing I wish was that they wouldn't, like, just, you know, throw in those random matches just for the sake
at last minute. Yeah, and they did a lot of that last night, and we'll definitely talk about that. But I will also say, I think the problem is just that it's not hyped the way we believe this car should be hyped. Like,
now,
if this
was
UFC,
a symptom of marketing, or is that a symptom of, like, I don't know about you, but personally, I'm just tired of this company a little bit. Like, I need a little space with this company right now, and I don't mean that I'm not going to be watching. It's not that I'm not going to be watching. It's I will still tune in, but they're going to do their own thing.
You know, it's funny you say that, and I will answer that with both. It is both A and B, and I'll explain in real quick. And it's basically saying, yes, it's marketing and promotion, especially when you compare it to your competitors who do a marvelous job doing marketing for their events, whether it's NXT, whether it's, you know, one of their pay-per-views, whatever like that. They do phenomenal that way, especially what we saw last week. It's just insane. And their lack of doing that, even though they do above average than most promotions do, absolutely. But, like, again, it goes when we compare 2K24 to Fight Forever. It's like you expect better from the competitors, but, and you know they can, and you know it has the ability to do it. They just don't do it for some reason. It parallels in the same way. Now, the other part of it is, yeah, people are fatigued. I relate just to dating. There are people who actually still do that these days in this generation. But in a dating sense, it's like when you have somebody, you date somebody and you're infatuated with that person for a long time. And then you after that, like, first year of a relationship, you start seeing the kinks, the infatuation's over, and you started noticing some things that you didn't, you know, that wasn't the reason why you fell for this person. And it starts to, you know, the whole infatuation aspect of it, the fun is starting to deteriorate away. And you're hoping that you get that same feeling that you had when y'all first met. But now it's like, all right, I still like this person, but, you know, they're doing some things that are, like, you know, kind of, excuse me, like rubbing me the wrong way. And now we're just putting it on a case by case basis. Do I still hang with this relationship, or do I just, you know, when you start getting that doubt, that's not what they should be doing. They should be providing you with a reason why to love them considerably. And there are still aspects of them to love. It's just right now, it's just like, yeah, I totally understand that mindset that you just mentioned.
And another thing, right? It's like, so that's kind of how I've been feeling. It's impossible for me to ignore what AEW is doing, obviously, right? Someone like hosting the main show, or even hosting this show, you know, and then you read more interviews, and this is what I'm trying to avoid until I absolutely need to. And it's kind of like, you know, that interview earlier this week or last week that Tony Khan gave. I don't know whether it was Sports Illustrated or where. I don't know. I just read it. I saved it. I'll read it later this weekend when I'm writing the news. And essentially, you know, Tony Khan said, yeah, competition is great because the companies hate each other. You know, and I said this last week.
Did he really?
Yeah. I said this last week, and I'll say it again, that for a person who keeps saying tribalism is bad, people need to be happy, and he goes out and says these type of things, and, you know,
it's ridiculous.
This isn't the first time he's done this. It's just like, Tony, just.
You know, you know when he first came around and we started learning about Tony, we liked him because he was a fan, and if he felt like a fan of the situation. No, and I'm not saying you. I'm saying in general, like the majority of people were digging him because he felt there's a sense of humanity within him, a relatability about him that we all loved as a fan. He was the spirit of that fan.
Yeah.
But now he's become he's turning into the spirit of that fan. You know, that toxic on social media fan. It's like, yeah, we appreciate that he loves the business and the industry, but he's becoming annoying.
But that's what he is
in a lot of ways.
That's he is one of us. You know, he's an internet.
He's now a reminder of how dorky we can be now.
Exactly. Anyways, that's AEW.
In general, not us two, just in general.
in general, right? Like, yeah, we're generalizing everything. That's what we do.
The general consensus of a online internet wrestling fan.
Yep. All right. Before we talk about AEW Dynamite, am I even recording? Yes, I am.
I swear to hot mess.
One day, I'm not going to be recording. And I'm not even going to tell you. I'm just going to, like, say, oh, I lost the show.
I ain't gonna lie. It actually happened to me maybe once with a guest. So don't even stress it. And God bless. Shout out to that guest.
All of this stuff, none of this stuff bothers me anymore. Like, it's just, it's so ebb and flow. Like, it's just so, like, whatever. It is what it is. Like, there's no point in stressing.
The best of the best. It's happened to, what gets me by with stuff like that is, like, it happened to the best of the best.
Yep, exactly. All right. Before we finish chatting about some AEW later on in the show, let us geek out a little bit. X-Men 97. Dude. You know what's funny?
Dude.
I saw this meme last week, and I forgot to send it to you. And it was essentially a wrestling meme, an X-Men 97 meme, and it was like the perfect merger of the two. The top frame was, I don't want to watch the Bray Wyatt documentary yet. I don't want to cry. And then the bottom frame is, why did I watch X-Men 97 episode 5?
I love that. That is awesome and well put. These memes lately, boy, they've been some on-point memes, brother, in wrestling and on that show. It's been crazy.
Yeah.
But this episode, really great follow-up, mind you, to last week. A really great subtle mind you, but this episode to me, and I spoke to you and I was like, I was excited as hell because it was a love letter to comic book fans. If you actually read the comics and if you know your X-Men lore, like from cover to cover, scene from scene, whatever like that, you recognize what this was paying homage to. I actually have this hanging on my wall right now, and it is X-Men issue number 275, which has Jim Lee's infamous cover, one of the best covers Jim Lee's ever done. But it also has the reveal of Xavier still being alive, and he is in the Shi'ar Empire. And this whole episode capitalized on that, and I was so excited about this. I went on social media with it. I was like, yo, I love that they're still catering to the comic book fans. And this was a great love letter to that. Even though it wasn't directly connected to the actual original, which I love in a sense, because go read the damn book. Go find a book on Amazon, Comixology or whatever like that. Or it's a great issue, but it's along the lines of that Shi'ar Empire and everything. So they did factor that into this episode, and I thought it was really great while also following up with last week, which is still like the greatest freaking episode ever.
Yeah, you know what, we talked about how one of the downfalls of this show is that they jump a lot in terms of story, and they try to get a lot of comic book references and in a way that they can market them in one episode. And I'm noticing more and more that what I'm seeing with friends and people who I talk to, acquaintances, those online people who message you when something cool happens, and that is people are going out trying to find source material. So I'm like, you know what? It might be a busy show. It might be chronologically insane, but but it's doing its job at the end of the day, which at the end of the day, all of this is to help sell comic books.
It, you know, it's, you know, if that was by design, that was awesome, because it was like, you got your hardcore fans are going to watch. And when the hardcore fans get excited about it, and then they start talking about it online, and if you like it as a casual fan and you start reading the comments about it and where it is coming from, yes, by design, it easily lead them back into sell comic book sales, which I hope would be a good deal. I mean, I did this, you know, back in the day with my contest that I put out for ACMG, you know, the Omega Fist tournament. And it was basically, you know, people, comic book hardcores, you know, debating on what comic book characters were the most powerful. And, you know, this became a an actual contest that they won. And it, the people that were on the outside looking in, reading, you know, reading the comments and them going back and forth on who they thought was the most powerful, you know, character to advance to the tournament, it led people to start actually looking for the source material of those books as well. So, you know, kudos to them. If this was by design, I get it now.
Yeah.
It was, exactly. It was absolutely awesome.
Yep. All right, man. No, it's such a good episode. Very fun episode. And, you know, it's this show is man. And I watched the next batch of episodes last night. Brother, that's all I'm going to say. Brother.
I'm not ready. I'm not ready.
No one's ready. Wow. No one's ready for Asuka. No one's ready. Nobody's ready for what's to come.
You know what's funny, too?
Having said that, Disney sent me all the episodes except for the finale.
Yeah, I think they just teased you. They gave you the proverbial the proverbial tickling dangling
the
carrot.
They're tickling the balls.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I love Invincible. We don't talk about that show, and they did go through the season finale, which was absolutely awesome. But and normally Invincible is usually my favorite show of the year for animated series. Man, this X-Men. This X-Men man right now. I mean, just not just from storytelling, which is they were known for doing, but the damn animation is just gets better and better every week. And this was so close to a Jim Lee episode, Jim Lee and Scott Williams episode. It wasn't funny.
Yeah. Do you think this is going to start a revolution of animated TV shows again?
I didn't know it stopped. I honestly didn't know it actually stopped. I mean,
when you look at it, it didn't stop.
But are you talking about like original American animated TV shows?
Yeah.
I don't know, because I watch a lot of Netflix. I watch a lot of Prime Video, and they have some.
Let me clarify this. The comic book animated.
Okay, revolution. Comic book licensed animated.
Remember, we're getting that new Batman show soon.
Which is done by Paul Dini.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I put it like this. You know what's funny? If it is, it'd probably be because of those two. Because you got a lot of the people who are, you know, behind those books and they're revitalizing this. I mean, look. This is what happened 30 years ago. I mean, the boom period, again. It is kind of a boom. It could slow. I mean, look what wrestling is doing right now. There's another boom period actually happening as we speak in a lot of ways. Comics, I think it could happen again. I think look what the Marvel Cinematic Universe has done. I mean, the entire Infinity Saga was nothing of stories based on the 90s comics.
You know what the MCU did, in my opinion? It stopped Disney and Warner Brothers from canceling a lot of comic books. That's what the MCU.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Freaking. And let's be real. It's RDJ and Jon Favreau who gets full. And in a lot of ways, Wesley Snipes also gets the full credit for all these in a lot of ways. But at the same time, what it has done is that it did what social media has done for people. It dumbed down the idea of actually reading. Because now you can just watch it.
Yeah.
You know? And somehow we got to get back to going back to the time where we loved and enjoyed reading because these stories that they are, some of these stories that they've come out with over the years have been great, but just not enough people have been reading these books.
100%.
Can I say one more thing about that episode that, conversation has come up on social media. The one line, Deathbird, I think was the MVP of this episode. And she said a line that people like we were just clamoring over. And she told Xavier basically, you know, if you want to go back to your Milky Way ghetto. And when she said that, people were like, damn, that was shady as hell. And she said it with conviction.
The notion of our planet being the Philadelphia of the universe.
Oh, thank you.
You knew I had to.
I take that as both an insult and a badge of honor in a lot of ways for some reason. it's like Eddie Kingston. It's like, yeah, I'm the king of the bums. Like, what?
Look.
I'll take it.
Philadelphia has a weird, funny place with me. Remember that Hitch bot from a few years ago that Kevin Smith would always talk about and follow?
Yes.
And that got me into following that thing. Traveled the world, traveled everywhere. One day, in what city? And it got destroyed.
Philadelphia. We love you. We love you, Kevin Smith.
Yep.
Of course, he was from Jersey, so that might have something to do. That might have had something to do with it.
Exactly. Look, what you were saying about reading, right? And this is my hope is that DC, WB, and Disney need to just wake up and make these books more accessible. Now the issue is
accessible. Right? What way? Explain.
So here's the thing: sell them wherever they can sell them. Now. This is good and bad, right? Because do you remember this huge thing a few years ago when Disney and Warner Brothers wanted to bypass Diamond as the distributor and essentially distribute things on their own to supermarkets and corner stores and things like that, right?
Like they used to back in the day, yeah.
But the comic nerds, you know, and I'm lumping myself in that group, I love the idea personally, but the comic community, for the most part, didn't want this to happen because somehow they thought this would hurt comics. And I'm like, no, it would hurt Diamond, the singular distributor of comic books.
Right. Right. Now, like for those kids who didn't grow up like I did,
I went to the smoke shop to get comic books. That's right. Exactly. I remember one of my first memories of comic fandom. Was buying The Death of Superman in the smoke shop, buying two copies of that, once for me to read and one for me to put away, because that's what my brother told me what to do.
That's what we used to, I have in my long boxes, I got like five different long boxes of comics, and a lot of them are doubles. A lot of them are doubles of number ones and all this stuff, and they're never being opened. They're never being open. Some of them are even framed right now because they're autographed. But, that's how we used to do. Like, I grew up back in the day, like in the 80s and all the stuff. We used to go to 7-Eleven. Boom, right there. Whole entire magazine section right there. Wrestling mags, game mags, comics right there. On the pillar. We used to go to corner stores, get our penny candy. Penny candy. God damn, I'm old. and we used to grab like an Iron Man back in the day or whatever, or you know, Luke Cage or whatever like that. That was just right there. And we used to rock with it. It didn't hurt a damn thing.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like it didn't. No, stop it.
But I'm just saying that's the thing, right? We're saying make it more accessible, make it easier for people to buy, but then you have a whole
actually helps the community, it helps the
group
economy.
Of people. Who for some reason want to defend Diamond to the depths, but also hate the fact how Diamond distributes comic books. Let's be honest, there's some shop, I don't know whether, and I love how shops blame Diamond for everything. It's like, no, you guys ruined the comic book because you guys just throw boxes when you get them delivered, right?
Right,
no,
exactly.
Diamond.
I mean,
it's Diamond.
Before you do that, you got to learn, you know, you got to learn the phrase mint condition.
Yeah.
Okay.
And let's be honest.
That's why I forever do appreciate comic book stores, because they get it.
Real comic book stores.
Real comic book stores, yeah.
Not Not a vanity comic book store, which pop up a lot. Real comic book stores. There's not too many left.
It really isn't. And by the way, for those who don't know, explain vanity comic book shops.
For me, vanity comic book shops are like pop-ups with the owners who think they know comics, who try to sell you a $40 book for $140, things like that. That to me, that's a
vanity comic book shop. This is why I missed Wizard.
Yeah.
That's why I missed Wizard Magazine, man. Wizard was my ish. Like, for those who don't know, Wizard Magazine is like, well, now the company is now Fan Expo, but they used to be called Wizard World, and they got their fame from this magazine that used to come out, which was a price guide, you know, when during the boom period, because all these comics were starting to rate, you know, go up in value. And now it's like your book, the book that you have has to be like at least 30, 50 years old in order to have some type of value to it, has to be mint condition, all this stuff. But, you know, before the CDC or whatever the hell that group was called, we used to have to go by the price guide. And it's like they would give you the prices of how much this book was every single time. And it was awesome. It was awesome. We don't have that now. But you would have comic book shops that would have stuff like that. And, you know, they couldn't pull the wool over you because of it. Because if you were an avid comic book fan, you would always grab a Wizard, you know, and make sure that what it is, what it is.
How do you feel about the CGC graded comics?
If you notice, I've shown you pictures of my Jim Lee, signed books. I like five of them, five or six of them right now. I framed all of them. I appreciate what they do. I get it. I understand how they do it. I like the way they preserve it. Honestly, it's the way they package it. I hate the way they package it because it looks unimpressive to me, and I can't hang it up or whatever like that. It just looks like a big sheet of plastic.
Yeah, for me, so there's two types of collectors, right? There's a collector who collects them to resell, and then there's a collector who collects them because that's their passion. I'm the latter.
That's me.
You're the latter. I unfortunately lost the comic books that were near and dear to me at the flood. I saved some, but so many of them were destroyed. And it is what it is. It sucks. But my whole train of thought was I would never sell these books. I would never, ever, 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 ever sell these books. That was never an option for me, right?
Like, it had to be something extremely big for me to want it. Like, extreme. Insane. Like I said, like, and case in point, and shout out to my friend Pat, who like gave these to me. The long boxes that I have belong to the guy who got me into comic books, and he died. He was a heart surgeon in Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. But he was Haitian, you know, him and his family, Haitian family, great Haitian family, lived in Philly. But he was a huge comic book fan. Yeah. Like, I was reading Casper. And Richie Rich before this dude came up, and like I've read my first Spider-Man comic book. It was like, okay, it's time for me to grow up. Get on. But he was so pristine about the way that he handled his books. Like, there's not one near mint condition in those long boxes. It's insane.
Yeah.
And I credit that to his, you know, him being a heart surgeon, have to be precision based off of that. So I cherish these things in honor of him, and I will do. They will. It had to be something insanely big for me to want to get rid of them.
Yep. Look, and I'm not bashing any. If you're in the game to sell, good for you. But, you know, word of advice: get them graded because they're worth shit if they're not graded.
Right. In a lot of ways, in some ways it is, in some ways it isn't. If they are signed in some significant ways, you could.
If they're signed. That's a tough one because, you know, with the whole grading system, if you go the CGC route, you need some form of proof, some form of
certificate
of authenticity. Like, I know, I'm just saying though, right? If that's the route that you want to go.
If I really wanted to, I could like, look, this is my picture with the comic books with Jim Lee right there.
Yeah.
There's video of him signing it right here. I think we're good.
But that's the thing. They need some proof that this is a legit signature of someone so that it can be graded properly.
Absolutely. They can also really check signature authenticity as well. Yep. Even if you don't, there is some ways that you could check authenticity of it as well.
Yep. But yeah, that's the difference between like, and so that's the thing. I would buy grade comic books. Yes. If it's like a holy grail of mine, would I ever grade my own comic books? Probably not.
No. That's me right now. It's like I didn't buy them with the intention of selling them. I'm not like that dude that when he was making Stan Lee sign like 10 different books and everything,
yeah,
holding up the line. No, I'm not that dude. I'm not that dude. Shout out to all those, like you said, shout out to all those people to do. I've been to San Diego Comic-Con. It is the craziest thing I've ever seen when people are like getting into like booths and lines to get to like exclusives and all the stuff. These eBay dudes are hardcore.
Look how they treat wrestlers.
Yeah, I mean, they're one and the same, to be honest.
Yep.
But
chances are they
the
are.
Way San Di- one and the same. Yeah, I mean, honestly, the way San Diego Comic-Con has their setup and everything and how they do it is, man, it is a science to how they do it. I admire what they do, but at the same time, it's like they can, some of them can be overboard with it.
I know, 100%, man. All right. Let us move on. I want to talk about, so over the past few days, I've been watching TV at night. I'm just really trying to disconnect when I'm done work and done SNME work and done work in general for the day. I know. I've been watching a lot of TV. Watched a series called Time. It's on a BBC BritBox. Very good. It's only two series, three episodes, a series, about an hour each. So very easy watch. Two seasons.
Sci-fi?
It's about prison and the stories of certain people in prison. The first season stars Sean Bean. Really, really, really cool. Really good story. Very fun. Yeah. The second season has Jodie Whittaker, Bella Ramsey, and some other people. It's like really great show, really great cast. Such an easy watch.
This is like True Detective, where they just have like certain people do these roles and all that stuff. Like you got these really good quality actors do these roles.
Anthology seasons. Very good show.
Exactly. And
also, I've been every few months, I kind of try to catch up on anime. So I've been watching Chainsaw Man. So fucking good. So good.
My wife hates that damn anime.
I love it. It's right up my.
We went to San Diego. We went to New York Comic Con, and I haggled her. I ripped her bad because there was a lot of Chainsaw Man, cosplays out there. I'm like, check it out, your favorite.
This is literally how my nephew, my 18-year-old nephew, described Chainsaw Man. Mm-hmm. Horny, violent, and cool. What more could you ask?
Enough said. It sounds like one of those commercials with video game or movie commercials where they got somebody who you don't know, this critic that you never heard of before, and that's how they kind of review it.
Yeah,
and it's like, where is Simpson 29 at? Where the hell is that kid?
Right. Also, so I love Crunchyroll because they simulcast with shows that are out right now.
And I love my Crunchyroll subscription.
I caught one last night that I absolutely adored. It's called Kaiju Number 8.
Funny you said that. I just saw on their platform on Facebook, like they just posted something about that.
Watch it. One episode in. Okay. Watch it. Just watch it. That's all I'm going to say. It's so good. So freaking
good.
It got a lot of
feedback from people. So I'm like, okay, there's so much to watch on freaking Crunchyroll. It ain't funny. You know what I'm doing right now on Crunchyroll? I'm trying to watch every single damn episode of the original Dragon Ball because I didn't watch all of it. I didn't only watch like certain tournament sagas and all this stuff, but I never sat down to watch
like
all of it.
Dragon Ball?
The original. Yeah, when he's a kid.
Okay.
When Goku's a kid.
Gotta be sure. Gotta be sure.
I watch. Of course, when it's on syndication, they don't show everything. They show just the main arcs.
For me, like remember, Dragon Ball, when it came out in North America around the same time as Sailor Moon, it was only 13 episodes long, right? Years
exactly.
later, they release all however many.
Exactly. So that was my point. It was like, I think when they showed the first 13 sagas, that was one thing. But originally, like annually back in the day here, when you were living there, it was like a holiday special.
Yeah.
And it was like one episode, one long episode or movie that they showed of it. And then we didn't see it for another year. And then, like, I think a decade later, that's when you started seeing the 13 episode series with it. But lo and behold, we just knew that it was like, what is 400 of these episodes? So, and then later on, they brought it back out again and they, you know, showed mostly the main arcs, but not the filler episodes and everything. So I'm just sitting down watching every, it's actually really good.
It is.
Like, those first, filler episodes too are just enjoyable.
It is so underrated. Everyone talks about Dragon Ball Z. You know, let's just ignore GT for the most part.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I try to watch GT. This one of those times, every once in a while, I will come back and, like, you know, I'm going to try to watch GT. I'm going to try to. I cannot watch past a certain point. Like, I try to make it up to the baby saga and all that, but it's like, I can't. It's just, it's so unenjoyable.
Man, that's when I feel a lot of shows jumped the shark. Remember, GT came out at the same time as Sailor Moon Stars.
Yes. Like, oh, God, yeah.
The shows were way past their prime by that point.
Well, that too, plus you got to remember, you know, Akira Toriyama didn't have really too much input on GT. And
or care.
I think it reminded me like the third season of the Boondocks when Aaron McGregor was taken off the show and you saw how the quality of the animation was great, but the writing and the telling and the episodes just didn't live up. It didn't nearly live up to when he was actually writing the actual show. And that's what it always reminded me of. So yeah, we're gonna leave that out. But the rest of them, they are me.
Yep. But yeah, Kaiju number 8, go watch it. And talking about
definitely check to add it to my list.
Talking about Crunchyroll, in my opinion, especially now with the merger of Crunchyroll and Funimation, which is kind of funny that they're using Crunchyroll as the main platform.
Because for those who don't
name,
know,
it's
like
the name value. It's because Crunchyroll has a name value.
Funimation was the bigger value. And it's fact.
No. Funimation is the bigger company, but I think in terms of streamers, Crunchyroll is what they want to use.
And I totally understand that now. But the funny thing is, it's just like, one, it's all owned by Sony, mind you. So Funimation, they brought Funimation, and Funimation technically bought, you know, Sony because they were making more money. And then they just decided it was a weird strategy. But, you know, when you put it to that perspective, I understand because it's leaning on to the hardcores.
Now,
the whole point, if you will,
that I'm trying to make is that, in my opinion, pound for pound, Crunchyroll is the best streaming service out there.
It's the WWE. It literally is the WWE of streaming. I mean, yeah, you got Retro Crunch out there and then you got Netflix and all the stuff that are trying to compete, which. To Netflix credit, they are doing really well with their anime library. Prime Video, I would give it a nice little third, not too much, but Retro Crunch is the free network out there right now that shows classic anime that we grew up with. But yeah, nobody's messing with Crunchyroll. Nowhere near. Especially now because all that they finally are migrating the rest of the Funimation library onto the deal. It's a set. You know, but here's the thing. And I think we talked about this before, but I always got to bring this up. The dubs versus sub debate should have been over a long time ago, strictly because of how the merger happened.
Yeah.
Funimation was making more money than Crunchyroll. So to the point that they even brought Crunchyroll. And the reason being is because they had more variety of anime to watch at the time. Remember, Crunchyroll was strictly subs. Funimation was both sub and dub, and the fact that they were successfully doing better than them tells you that people were actually listening, reading the dubs, checking out the dubs, and they were fans of the dub actors.
It's not for that reason. 30 years ago, where the translation was off, the voices sucked. It's a whole new era. It doesn't matter.
That's
anymore.
My point. So, like, and hence why I begin the anime uppity term because it's like, come on, get real. Like, this is not like. The 80s and the 90s. And again, watch Retro Crush because you watch Retro Crush is free. You can check it out, but watch them because you can watch those classic animes and you can see how some of the, you know, the ADR back then, they didn't really give it the quality that we got now from these guys. And these guys are awesome.
Back
now.
Then, we had to deal with conflicting stories if you watched dub versus sub.
Absolutely. I mean, Sailor Moon, no bigger example than that. because, you know, they were too ahead of their time in terms of the alternative storytelling than we were in the States.
Dare you know? I say it was too woke for North America?
You mean like X-Men is?
Don't get me started on this again. Don't even get me.
You know that new woke show that talks about things that we never talk about in 1963 September.
Speaking of which, I'm not gonna say it. I'm not gonna say it. Whatever.
I just don't get it. Social media.
Social media is a hell of a thing. Pop culture, hell of a thing.
Bless your heart.
I love the fact that we base our quote unquote hobbies on pop culture and social media to a certain extent.
It really is. It is. And it's sad in a lot of ways, too.
We're part of the problem, Dax. We are the problem.
We're the solution within a bigger problem. And that bigger problem is just growing every single day.
We're Neo?
Yes. We see. Look, everybody else sees redheads and blondes and brunettes. And we see code.
With that said, let us jump to some AEW Dynamite. Dax, let's just get this conversation out of the way. Did this episode excite you more
for the pay-per-view? Yes, 90%, yes. 90% because it was a really, really good go-home show. It, you know, it washed away of everything that we didn't like about last week, and it really focused on what they should have been focused on. I thought they did a great job with some great matches, getting us excited for this week. It wasn't the best go home show I've ever seen in the world, but it was above average solid, in my opinion.
Okay. All right. Let's remember that. John Moxley returns to kick off the show. And just remember, he is the new IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. At what point is Tony Khan just going to buy New Japan Pro Wrestling?
I don't know. Help them. Don't buy them. That buying them doesn't mean
how is he helping them? He's not helping them. So is he helping them by stealing all their stars? Is he helping them by?
Do you fault him for that, or do you fault New Japan for that?
I fault New Japan 100%. Japan should be saying no, fuck you. New Japan should be being competitive with their contracts.
Which is funny because they do that. They actually have done that in the past for WWE and say, screw you guys, we're not messing with you, because they knew if buying them, they're going to screw them over. Look, they saw code at the time when WWE was messing with UK and saw what happened there and saw the aftermath of what happened. It was like, you know, messing with the dude from the monorail on the Simpsons. But for some reason they work with AEW, and I don't see where AEW,
any company,
makes them better
that has worked with AEW, Impact Wrestling, New Japan Pro Wrestling, CMLL, AAA, have benefited zero from the relationship with AEW.
It's so true. That Kenny Omega saga of Impact was hilarious, just for the fact that, like, nobody got over but him.
Yeah. Rich Swann get over.
That's not true.
You know who got over?
Don Collins got over.
The Good Brothers got over because they got two paychecks.
Absolutely.
In the middle of the pandemic.
And Don Collins got over majorly from that. Yeah. Other than that, no. Like, Kenny was the belt collector at that time. It was crazy.
John Moxley comes up.
You're absolutely right.
I'm going to sound clip that one, by the way. It's going to be part of the soundboard.
Gotcha.
You saying, you're absolutely right, Boris. All right.
I love editing and hate editing, folks.
I know, right? You're talking to the person who, like, refuses to edit anything. But for me, it's more authenticity. It's authenticity, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Editing shows heavily, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like getting that natural feel. If you fuck up, you fuck up.
Absolutely. If I don't have to do it, I don't. Like, I pray for, especially when I do interviews, that, like, it you know, that it goes smoothly.
Yeah.
And I don't have to do any cleanup or anything, but otherwise, yeah, I get it.
John Moxley says one of the first championships he ever won as a professional wrestler was in Indianapolis. Moxley reflects on the fact that through his entire career, he's been told what he can't do, and he's made a career of proving people wrong. Moxley said, Well, those people can kiss his ass. He holds up the IWGP Heavyweight Championship and says that he's been chasing that title for 5 years. He then said people said it would be impossible, but he says it wouldn't be impossible if people knew what was inside him and what he can do when his back is against the wall.
I don't think it was that title that he particularly wanted, but that's the one he got.
John Moxley. I'm not saying anything. John Moxley turns his attention to the Don Callis family and says Callis is a creep. Moxley says that Callis is telling and feeding his group nothing but lies. Moxley is mad that Danielson was attacked on Collision and calls out the Callis family and calls them gutless. Moxley calls out Powerhouse Hobbs and challenges him to a match next week on Dynamite and says that when he's done with Hobbs next week, he'll know that Callis is feeding him lies. I love how... So, good promo, but I love how he has zero proof to back up anything he just said outside of, trust me, I'm the face, kind of.
Hey, conviction goes a long way. Look what it did for the Ultimate Warrior. We didn't know what the hell he was saying, but we believed in what the hell he was doing.
Did we, though? Did we really? Yeah, we did. I like this overall, but it just made me laugh, right? It makes me laugh in that face heel dynamic where it's like we're just going to take him by word because he's acting like the face right now.
Look, when you look, politicians do it all the time. When you have conviction in your voice, you can sell it to anybody, especially people who the level of naivete we have today in society. Yes, you can sell anybody.
Of not being able to sell or being able to sell, Mercedes Moné is backstage.
Reach.
Moné says last week someone attacked her in the dark because they were too afraid to face her in the light. Moné says as the CEO, she can't wait to pay back whoever attacked her last week. Then she ponders if it was Julia Hart or someone trying to make her think it was Julia Hart. Moné said she'll be watching the mixed tag match very closely.
I can't wait till she wrestles because it'll wash away everything that I'm feeling right now for her, which is it doesn't feel genuine. And yeah. I say that because her promo style is exactly like, you know, the way she left. And I feel like she still sounds like what she's been fed in the other company in a lot of ways. And I'm like, you know, what AEW does right is they have genuine promos and their interviews. And when they talk, like I said, with conviction, but they talk from the heart. I don't feel like that's Mercedes that we know. Like, I don't think when she was in The Mandalorian that she was actually talking, you know, like that to other people. I know when she gets upset with people or yells at people or gets emotional, get into a conversation, that she has that same dialogue style. It just doesn't sound natural. And I'm like, just take a breather and say what you feel.
For all, and that's the thing, right? These promos feel heavily scripted.
Yeah. And that
might be what she's comfortable with.
A product. She is from the product. She's a product of her environment. That it is what it is, but she has to get out of that situation of, because I think she has it in her. I absolutely think she has it in her to be able to, you know, say what's from her heart. And I think she just needs to be around more people who does it herself. Maybe that's the reason why she decided to stay in AEW, because maybe she can learn from that. And we'll see how she is a year from now.
Yep. We'll put a pin on that conversation for another 12 months.
Yeah.
All right. TNT champion Adam Copeland and Willow Nightingale versus Brody King and TBS champion Julia Hart. As Copeland's in the ring, we cut to the back and see that Willow Nightingale was attacked backstage. Now Copeland is forced to start the match alone.
It totally caught me off guard. Now I thought it was cool. I thought it was cool and I liked the way it ended off.
So like, it's Stokely Hathaway and Chris Statlander beating everyone up, right? Like we can safely assume that.
Well, I mean, in a sense, not in this case. Because, you know, what happened with the Willow, you mean?
Yeah, both cases.
I thought it was the Dark. I thought it was the House of Black.
Why would it be them? That's what they want you to believe.
I don't know how that scenario would be where you know, she would get attacked in the back and she would not see that it was both Stokely and Statlander. I mean, they couldn't do a Tonya Harding on her in the back without seeing her. Look, the guys are known for turning off the lights and saying peekaboo.
that's what they want you to believe.
I need to see, you know, the logic factor needs to kick in for me. If that's the deal, that's to me.
Yeah, think too much,
man. You know how I am. Like,
you know that I'm like feeding you. I'm trying to get you to go.
No, I'm using critical thinking right now. I'm like, how would that make sense?
Whoa. Why would you use critical thinking when talking about professional wrestling?
Because I grew up watching NWA for goddamn sake. That's why.
Yeah, well, because the NWA is so powerful right now still.
About that.
I'm going to shut up.
No, that's a whole other subject right there. That's called stop spending my damn money.
I know, right? All right. Willow Nightingale eventually comes out with the people who attacked her, Chris Statlander and Stokely Hathaway, back. I wish people could see your eyes right now. Back in the ring, King goes for a slam, but Copeland gets a foot up, which Nightingale uses to tag in. Willow is in, hits King with a crossbody block. Copeland spears King. Willow with a cannonball in the corner on King. The ref had his back turned, checking on King. Hart wraps her hand with a chain link and hits Nightingale. Hart tags in, puts Nightingale in a heartless, and the ref calls the match. So your winners, Brody King and Julia Hart.
That overall was a pretty fun match. I enjoyed it. It wasn't anything big deal, but I really will give credit to Julia Hart again, because for the last few weeks, her matches had, you know, a lot of setup buildup going into it, and the setup has been going. It could have gone wrong at any time, and we've seen it go wrong, but Julia seems to always be, her timing is always really good, and she manages to make the finish worthwhile. So, you know, it was a little fun, enjoyable match. It wasn't anything bigger than that, but I enjoyed it.
Yep, that's it. Look, I go back to this, and this is something that, in my opinion, that AEW wrestlers need to learn and remember. Not every match needs to be 100. And I understand bang for buck, entertainment value, but you can entertain your fans without going at 100 and telling a good story and setting up future instances, which, by the way, we have a pay-per-view this Sunday. So,
right.
This is a perfect example of that.
Mm-hmm. You know what's funny too? I in a lot of interviews over the years, I've seen, you know, where younger talent get, you know, becomes more seasoned and established, and they get to the point where they become locker room leaders. And it's always the same thing. It's like when they're young, they always want to be boom, 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 fast. And then when they get to a certain point in their careers, they go back and talk to the other people, and they always say, like, and they start to say the same things that they were always against talking about. And it was, you know, I used to be so fast, and they used to tell me to slow down, and then, you know, I never listened, and then now I'm in this stage of my life, and now, like, I'm telling these kids to slow down. I've seen it so many times from different wrestlers.
CM Punk
that has done that. It's like, okay, if you hear it one multiple times, then come on, people, watch these interviews, listen to these people who've done it. Don't make the same mistakes.
Don't take off years of your career for no reason.
Right. Right. Timing is everything.
Like, entertain people without destroying your body.
Here's the thing. Some of the greatest of all time have gotten there being less, doing less. Like, I can name a bunch of people who, like, made it into the Hall of Fame and made it, you know, to the greatest of all time list, have done way less than a lot of these kids are doing, especially in the indie scene, where they're doing some of the dumbest things in the indie scenes for only like $40 and no health insurance.
Yeah. Well, what makes then you got Maxwell Jacob Freeman now is the fact the social media age, where they are going to get noticed because of clicks, but they're not. Honestly, they're going to get noticed by the wrong people. They're going to get noticed by us. But you think a WWE scout or someone in the AEW ranks? Well, that's a different story. They'll probably buy it.
Yeah,
but. You think a WWE scout at the PC is going to be like, oh, we got to bring this person in because they, you know, chewed on glass and spit it out.
Right. And then all on top of that, like, it doesn't get over that much as people do. And then it becomes a flash in a pan type of moment. and it doesn't give people talking. Great example. Remember when I'll compare real quick Mick Foley and his jump off the Hell in a Cell to Canyon's jump off of the three, the three cells that they called in WCW?
I forget what it was called. Yeah, I know which one. Yeah. The Ready to Rumble cage.
Yes, exactly. And he did that long run because they wanted to do the Mick Foley, you know, moment, and it never got him over.
Yeah. Poor guy.
It's like do less, get more.
Yep.
And people like, again, I watched NWA. They got so over with doing less than the more than that day than these guys have had today. It's just crazy. But I digress.
WWE made a whole business out of this, doing less for more.
Hogan, Cena. I can keep on going with that one.
We can keep going for days.
For days.
Mercedes Moné runs down with a chair in hand and chases off Julie Hart. Moné and Nightingale don't see eye to eye, and Moné shakes Copeland's hand.
Again, another just pretty good segment. I like that. Little goes a long way. I like the fact that she did the running and all the stuff. That could have been just the whole entire bit to the night. She didn't have to do a promo, but I get that they need her to talk. Just somebody needs to tell her, like, yeah, what do you normally say? Tranquilo? Yep. Like, it's like, just speak from the heart. Like, she needs a Paul Heyman so bad.
He really does. Stokely Hathaway. Renee Paquette is with Samoa Joe. Joe says Swerve Strickland will one day make a great champion, but right now he's a nuisance. Joe says Swerve has had every championship opportunity, but still manages to choke. Samoa Joe's Swerve is a choke artist, and the irony is that on Sunday, he'll choke him out.
And when I say we need a Paul Heyman, you know, she needs to talk to Joe. She needs to talk to Joe. She needs to talk to Swerve. She needs to talk to a lot of those guys. Joe never disappoints on camera. Whatever he does, he's just awesome. Really gravitate to him.
A video package for FTR and Young Bucks match starts to air, but it's cut off by Matthew and Nicholas. The Jacksons say they'll put it on social media later, and they say they're about to go out and preview their match shortly. Okada says after tonight, Pac won't make it to Dynasty.
A little goes a long way. I love Okada. You don't expect. I mean, if you watched Okada for a while, like you know he has antics like this, but it's like how I felt about Jeff Jarrett, you know, being with, you know, being AEW in a lot of ways. It's like it just fits him so well, and it does so much, and just they utilize him perfectly. They don't overwhelm us with him.
The Elite, Okada, Matthew, and Nicholas Jackson versus Pac, Daniel Garcia, and Penta. El Zero Miedo.
Very fun match. Absolutely loved it. What's not to like about every one of these guys in the ring?
Yep. All right. This was a fun match. This is exactly the type of match that you thought you would have. Good preview to Sunday. Exactly what you needed it to be. They kept the pace relatively good. Kind of ensured that no one would get injured. Exactly what you want from a go-home show. Okada does a tombstone pile driver on Garcia and then Penta. Okada held Garcia in place while the Jacksons hit him with a double super kick. With Penta the only one standing, Okada hits a Rainmaker for the win. After the match, the Young Bucks hit Daniel Garcia with the EVP trigger, and the Bucks brought a ladder into the ring. Nicholas body slams Garcia on it. The Elite placed them inside of the ladder. Nick Jackson goes up top, but Pac rushes in with the bell hammer, causing the Elite to run away and saving Garcia's life.
I think Garcia was the highlight for me in this match. I think even though we knew he was probably going to be the target to beat in this match, they allowed him to look good before that. And then on top of that, he really took that Rainmaker really good.
Yeah. He did. Taz mediates a chat between Hook and Jericho. Chris Jericho and Hook were in the ring with Taz between them. Hook is in the corner eating chips. Jericho thanks Hook for coming out. Jericho said he pulled Hook off the ring apron last week because he wasn't listening to him. Had nothing to do with Shibata. Jericho says he is the learning tree and everyone who has listened to him has gone through the Jericho vortex. I can't stand this shit. Has gone through the Jericho Vortex, and they come back better on the other side, and they've been able to get to the next level. Jericho asked if Hook is ready to learn under his learning tree. Hook says no. Hook says he doesn't need Jericho's help. Jericho tells him not to be stupid. Taz tries to tell Jericho to relax, but Jericho tells him to stop. Jericho says that he is just doing what Taz should have done 30 years ago and give Hook some guidance. Taz is pretty heated now. Jericho says Hook isn't as good as he thinks he is. Taz gets right in the middle of between the two of them. Jericho pushes Taz down. The crowd's reaction was great because Jericho did, in fact, fuck up. Hook grabbed Jericho, shoves him down, and then Hook said he's going to show Jericho how good he is anytime, anywhere.
Two things that stood out to me about this segment. Mm-hmm. One was those damn bag of chips. Okay. So I get it. You can't show the branding of the chips. So their solution was to take the bag and put it inside out of the bag. Because, I mean, even colors to some extent is a branding. You know, if he's eating corn chips and you know Frito-Lay corn chips, you know the brand colors. So I get that. But it's just you're convincing me that he took a bunch of corn chips out of his bag, took his bag inside out, and then put the chips back in. Really? That was funny to me. I'm like, just put a plastic, just put a tape over it or whatever like that. Just call it a day because it's just ridiculous.
Or secure a sponsorship deal for chips.
There you go. And maybe they're working on it. Who knows? We don't, you know, who knows? I mean, woo, they already got the Woo deal. Let's just get some Woo chips, I guess, or whatever. but the other thing was actually more sad for me is to see Taz in a vulnerable type of situation. Now, I grew up, you know, watching ECW, and one of the biggest reasons for me watching ECW was Taz. Taz, for those who have never watched Taz, was one of the most dominant dudes in wrestling. I mean, he's like three apples high, but he was Bam Bam. He had Bam Bam strength, and he used to just like murder people. And he gave that real fight feel. And then he went to WWE, and then Stone Cold started bullying and beating up this dude that was once known as like the most dominant wrestler in the scene. And I knew that was on purpose for, you know, for the man formerly known for being the owner of that place. It was, you know, one of his little things that he used to do. And you started seeing him in a lesser light. And I always remember him for being one of the most real fight, you know, feel type of dudes. When you talk about that, like he, you know, one of the first guys that really, you know, the tapping, you know, when people started tapping out, he was one of the first dudes to really start that. Like nobody was tapping out of submissions until Taz was doing it. So, and I get he's older now. I get the deal. Yeah, and he still plays Jericho a little bit of a, yeah. Who's, you know, from a stratification, from a hierarchy. Yeah, he does play that role. And I get that. But it was just so sad to see him to that point. But when the crowd started saying you effed up, I'm wondering, like, were they saying that because of Hook, or were they saying that because they remember Taz and what he, this dude can do, and all he needs to do is grab you in the back. So with the Kata Hachime, you know, move and all the stuff. So I was like, I hope this pays off where Taz gets his, you know, payoff. He gets his receipt for this.
That's what I'm hoping.
That would make me feel better.
I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100% on that. All right. Now it's Swerve Strickland's turn to sit down with Rene Paquette. Strickland laughs about Samoa Joe calling him a choke artist. Strickland said he has struggled and stumbled throughout his entire career, but always finds success despite adversity. Strickland says that this Sunday, at the Sunday at Dynasty, Joe will call him the new AEW World Champion. Rene asks Swerve what makes him so confident. Strickland says, no disrespect to Rene, but he needs to talk to Joe directly. He gets up close to the camera and said he'll tell Joe to his face in the ring later on tonight.
Loved it. Just as much as I love Joe's, is intense. You can feel the intensity. I swear to goodness, if they don't give him this title, it's two things that they're going to stop. That's going to keep me from breaking up with this relationship. Probably him not getting his title right now, or him or Tony Khan bringing in, Nikki Bella. Those are the two biggest deal breakers right now.
What if both happen on Sunday?
I swear to goodness, that is like, you cheated on me, I'm out of here.
And you paid 50 bucks.
Look, it's algebraic in this case. Positive times negative equals negative.
Deonna Purrazzo versus Mariah May. Deonna Purrazzo gets a quick win in this match. After the match, Toni Storm attacks Deonna Purrazzo. Thunder Rosa comes out, took out Luther. Purrazzo and Rosa still didn't see eye to eye because of that tag match from Toronto a few weeks ago. They got into a shoving match, even though Rosa made the save. May took up Purrazzo, but Rosa was able to get a one-up on Storm. With Storm down, Rosa paints all over Storm's face with lipstick until Luther help Storm out of the ring.
It was just nothing to this, in my opinion. It did what it needed to do. It was straightforward. It just got out the way. Boom, let's move on. And we'll see that match going ahead.
Straightforward.
I didn't mind it at all. I think if anybody can help Thunder Rosa right now, it is Toni Storm. So we'll see how that goes.
Bullet Club Gold are backstage. Jay White challenges the Acclaimed to a winner-take-all match with the Ring of Honor six-man titles and the AEW Trios Championship on the line. The Acclaimed accept. It's going to happen during 0 hour.
So is this title for title?
It's a winner-take-all.
I get it, but that doesn't say title for title, I guess. I mean, I don't know. Is this a merger? Is we finally just going to get rid of one of these titles, or, you know, or are they just going to be all these guys going to be carrying around all this metal around in airports?
Yes. Yes to all.
Jesus. Oh, goodness. If you had a choice, if you had to choose neither one and not the other. Neither? Really?
Neither.
I mean, because I could have sworn everybody wanted Trios titles, and all of a sudden now they people don't want Trios titles.
I knew this was going to happen with the Trios division, right? It's just too much at that point.
It is, but I mean, here's my thing. I feel like they're going to get rid of the Trios titles and keep the Ring of Honor titles. Cause they gave them brand new redesigned belts.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, yeah, keep it in Ring of Honor, I guess. But I've grew up with the six-man tag titles from NWA. So I've always loved that idea. It's just they haven't been keeping up with it as much as we wanted them to.
It's hard right nowadays, right? There's only a finite amount of people that you can challenge.
Hey, but remember at one point they actually did have a dozen. Well,
remember who does all the booking and how he acts. You know, it's a flavor of the month, and then he forgets about it.
Nobody needs a therapist bad. I just know that, and I have mine. So, I mean, like, that list leaves out one person. And one person who can afford it. Afford Dr. Phil, man. Yeah. Bring him in.
Orange Cassidy versus Shane Taylor. This match was good. I like the fact that they played off the fact that Shane Taylor has his bros, Lee Moriarty and Anthony Ogogo, and Orange Cassidy has no one. And that was essentially the story of this match. Cassidy needed to take out Ogogo and Moriarty, and that's exactly what he does. Cassidy eventually is able to dodge a lot of moves, hits Taylor with the Orange Punch, gets the win. After the match, though, Lee Moriarty and Anthony Ogogo attack Orange Cassidy. Christopher Daniels and Matt Sydal come up for the save, but they are taken out by Trent Beretta and his best friend, his chair.
I like you said, I agree with you. I enjoyed this. I love the story that was being told with this. I'm loving Trent Beretta. I knew Trent was going to be a good heel, and he's. I feel like he's been chomping at the bits to be this guy for quite some time, so I am loving the development of him. Shane Taylor, always loved him. He just reminds me of a live version of a Mike Tyson punch out character come to life.
He is King Hippo.
Is King Hippo in a lot of ways. And look, I ain't messing with King Hippo either. That dude, he got hands. So, but I loved everything that happened in this match, and it did what it needed to do. And this is I feel like this is a really solid mid card, you know, match, right? You know, a story being told right now.
Yep, agreed. I'm really liking this. I love the fact that Shane Taylor is getting the time on TV. We talked about Anthony Ogogo, and it seems like it's gonna work out for the guy finally.
Yeah,
and Lee Moriarty. Lee Moriarty. He's so good.
He's so good, but he's finally starting to get hit. He's starting, you know, personality wise, he's starting to, developed finally too. That was, I think, it was the one thing that we always talked about him is he's great in the rings, phenomenal in the ring, but his personality just hasn't come out yet. These two together, I think they're jelly. I think they're gonna work with each other really well.
We get a video package hyping Roderick Strong and Kyle O'Reilly for their match at AEW Dynasty.
Man, this storyline is very interesting. We saw what happened recently, and you know, I'm looking forward to seeing this match. It's gonna be a great solid match.
So the next match, I'm trying not to sound negative, and I'm not, like, again, This is just my take 100%, and we're talking about Will Ospreay versus Claudio Castagnoli. I thought it was an excellent match, but it suffers.
Undeniably.
Great match, but it suffers from what we were talking about. That's why I set it up earlier in the show, and that's you doing don't less. Have to go at 10 all the time. And I understand the fans want this, and people bought tickets to watch this, and yada, yada, yada. But you can't use your entire arsenal of moves every match.
Well, and be, you okay. Know. I will defend Ospreay in saying, like, this wasn't even his final form. He, if you look at him when he first started into now, he has, because he had injuries, he has kind of, you know, diluted his arsenal a bit, but he still does what we think is a lot in a lot of ways, and he could go down further. What he hasn't done yet is the Storm Hammer. He has not done that. I've realized that he's only using the Hidden Blade for his finisher mostly. He has not used Storm Hammer yet. So I'm thinking he's saving that part up. But yes, I agree. He does. I wouldn't mind. Like, he does so good in doing like everything. He could do like at least five of his arsenal of his moves and be okay. But he does 20.
That's
and then and look, reality, he can do 50.
And I understand he can do it, and you know, you're right. He isn't going 100%, but you know, there needs to be, in my opinion, some logic, a little more logic in his matches. And by that I mean, you know,
some psychology. Like, in other words,
yeah, someone like a Claudio Castagnoli isn't the final boss. He's just the sub boss before he gets to Bryan Danielson on Sunday.
Oh, he's definitely mid boss level. Definitely.
Yeah. But you know what I mean,
like,
right?
Elden, like, Ring style. Yeah. He's like Elden Ring's mid-boss.
Yeah. A motherfucker that can kill you with one blow.
Exactly.
And you don't even see it coming.
Right. Exactly. Fuck, which is game. Why I don't play that game at all.
Joe, I know you're listening. God bless you for having the tolerance. Only you, with your positivity, could play those games. And, like, as long as you do.
Look, God bless him. I wish him the best in his future endeavors with that one. My tolerance level would not be able to handle that.
Would the ghetto come out? Would ghetto Dax come out?
If I start saying motherfucker in this show, if I start getting like really real, you know, yep. I played that damn game or something equivalent
it's
to
so
that.
Funny. It's so funny because, like, you know, as non-Latino as I am,
like,
certain things will get me to, like, go all cholo on you.
Yeah. No, y'all ain't pushed them buttons yet to see that version. Y'all better pray never to see that version.
Right? That's exactly it. After some back and forth, Ospreay hits a standing Spanish fly for a near fall. Ospreay was very frustrated at this point. He removed his elbow pads, goes for a hidden blade, but Castagnoli cut him off, does a pop-up uppercut, which was fucking beautiful. He just launched them in the air. Castagnoli went for a giant swing, but Ospreay countered into a DDT, then hits a Cancun tornado for yet another near fall. Castagnoli was very slow to get up. Ospreay sees the window, hits the hidden blade for the win. Now, I like how they're
addressing. He did the back version too.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, fuck you. He did the pimp slap version.
That version is, always gets me.
I like how they're addressing this because it never made sense since he showed up as a full-time wrestler, why he's still in the Don Callis family. So I like how they're finally addressing this. You know, the family attacks Castagnoli. Moxley makes his way out. He goes straight for Hobbs. He takes out Hobbs. Ospreay's like, what the fuck?
What is going on? Fuck? Yeah, you can see him. Yeah.
And then he walks away.
Yeah, I really did like the body language was really telling. I love that. I agree.
It was good.
And it's just it's a slow burn. Now we're starting to see because we did. Yeah, you're right. In interviews, they never question his integrity, his philosophy towards what they're doing in accordance to what he's doing. But I wonder. I feel like he also is aware.
Yeah,
he has an awareness factor of he knows what's going on. He's just laid back waiting for it. You know, whatever happens to happen, so he could be ready for it.
Exactly. One final meeting between Joe and Swerve. Swerve and Prince Nan are out. Strickland says he knows he's going to beat Joe on Sunday because he saw the fear in his eyes last week. His being Joe. Swerve then asks Joe to come out so he can talk to him like a man. Joe tries to come out. Security is all around. Swerve dives onto security from the top rope. Now Joe and Swerve are face to face. They begin to brawl. Joe gets the upper hand. Joe then gets in the ring, corners Prince Nana, but Strickland makes the save. Swerve hits Joe with the house call, but Samoa Joe comes right back, hits Swerve with a muscle buster, stands over him with the title belt to close the show. Dax, Wrestling Logic 101 says what?
Basically, we're going to see a new champion.
There you go.
Unless it was Impact or WWE from 5 years ago.
Yeah, for the most part. That is the show. Dynasty this Sunday. Remember that after the pay-per-view, we are going live here on Sunday night's main event as Matthew and Aaron Grant are going to be having an after party. We're going to be sending out a link so that you can join the show Sunday afternoon. Gonna be a good time.
What pay-per-view is after this?
What pay-per-view is after this?
Yeah.
Backlash?
Is it Double or Nothing?
For AEW?
Yeah, for AEW.
Double or Nothing.
It is Double. Okay. Because I'm trying to I'm weighing out how many pay-per-views I'm gonna be getting.
We'll talk. Memorial Day weekend. Right. Double or Nothing. Is it Memorial Day weekend? Yeah, it's Memorial Day weekend.
I think it yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Sounds good, but great episode. Well, enjoyable episode. I really enjoyed it. It's a great toss-up. We still got Collision to go to, so check out. So it'll be interesting.
Focus on your own shit, and people will enjoy it. Tell
y'all hear that?
Our listeners how they can listen to your own shit, and by shit, I mean great work.
It's really shit I gotta do, but no, just a big announcement towards that. Next week on Talk Time Live, where you can check out all shows, I'm bringing back a good friend of mine that I haven't talked to since 2020. That is definitely a long time coming. That is Tom Gibbous. Recognize the name if you're an anime fan and recognize the name. He is the voice of Shikamaru Naro from Naruto. Haven't talked to this dude in quite some time. I had his number on my cell for a long time. Been wanting to talk to him and bring him back on, especially in video form. So he texted him. He's agreed to come back, and we're going to do that next week. So Talk Time Live exclusive with Tom Gibbous, the voice of Shikamaru Naro from Naruto. We'll be back on next week. But if you like that episode and all of my episodes, you can check all of them, audio, video, at TalkTimeLive.com, where you can listen to ACMG Presents Talk Time Live and my video game podcast, Select Start. All new episodes every week, TalkTimeLive.com and wherever podcasts are played.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. This week, we have so much more shows to come through here on Sunday night's main event. We have the Smack Daddies back this week, I think. I'm pretty sure they are. But the Smack Daddies, they need, you know, everyone needs a little break. Everyone needs a little vacation. So I think the Smack Daddies will be back. We have the Collision Catch Up with Matthew and Aaron Grant. We have the Portland Review with Steve Swift still coming up. And then on Sunday, I'm going to be hosting the main show. Donnie's going to be back. We're going to be chatting some more wrestling, some more tit for tat. Chats, some more back and forth chats. Also, we're going to be having an interview with Jimmy Corderas this Sunday, so that's going to be a lot of fun.
Love Jimmy Corderas.
Yeah, it's going to be good. Trivia is going to be back this Sunday. So much to do. Chopped-tees.com if you want us to help support the show and buy a t-shirt. Patreon.com/SNME Radio. Another way that you can support the show. And for that, it's just $5 a month, and you get first cracks at everything that we do that is audience facing. Dax, as always, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
It's been fun. Let's do our thing. And let's sign out. Stay tranquilo. Goodbye.